Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad. Science on Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio. Black Hole
Radio. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. Just because Berry Gordy took Motown to L.A. does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. We are in the coming days of the anniversary, the 23rd anniversary of the Million Man March. 10-10-1995 to 10-10-2018. In honor of the Black World's Day of Atonement, from your Muslim family, I'm going to share with you a rendition from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to you all. I'm going to keep playing it until I know it has sunk in into each and every one of us. The wobble, because I need us to all to understand, myself included, that the deviation and the anxiety and the frustration and the imbalance that we each feel as Black men and Black women here in the United States of America is consistent with the wobble in the natural inclination of the planet on which we live, which we call Earth, and its relationship to its mastering partner, the sun. There is a wobble, but this wobble can be accounted for by understanding what the wobble is. So we're going to listen to the nature of man once again and the wobble from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
If you will bear with me for a few moments, I want to talk to us on the nature of human beings and the nature of the universe and show the microcosm and the macrocosm and the similarity in both. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that if you notice, nothing in the universe is produced perfectly round. Think about it. All of the planets are oblong. All of the stars are oblong. There is no perfectly round fruit, nor is there any round heads. Our heads are shaped like the earth, oblong. And because the first law of the universe is motion, then anything that is not perfectly round and is set in motion will have a wobble to its motion.
Right.
Are you listening?
Yes,
the earth on which we travel is traveling right now at the speed of 1,037 and a third miles per hour. But it's the smoothest ride you can get, except when the earth is disturbed through earthquake then you understand this ride is not smooth anymore. But under normal conditions, there is no airplane that you can get on that will give you a smoother ride than the planet that you came up out of and are on your way back into. And it never stops. Its motion is constant. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said it makes four dips in and out, giving us our seasons. And the only reason you don't feel the wobble or the imbalance of the planet is because the planet is in such perfect obedience to the law under which it was created, that this is what gives you your smooth ride, because it's obeying the law of light. Listen now, listen. You and I come up out of the earth, and in human nature, there is a wobble, an imbalance, an imperfection, if you will. This is why the Bible and Quran agree that the heavens and the earth were created under the number six. The Quran teaches that the universe was created in six periods of time. The Bible says he created it in 6 days. In the book of Revelation, it says, count the number of the beast. For the number of the beast is the number of a man, 666. The number six represents incompletion, imperfection, and dissatisfaction. A baby at 6 months is not complete. It's completed at seven. It is incomplete at six. So anything constructed under the number six is imperfect, incomplete. But God is constantly moving things toward completion, toward perfection. And this is why the New Testament says, behold, I make all things new. There will be a new heaven and a new earth, and the former things will pass away. God would not have to make a new heaven and a new earth if he was satisfied with this one. Since it is incomplete, there's always dissatisfaction. And it is the dissatisfaction in human nature that keeps us moving onward toward eventual perfection. It is dissatisfaction that brings about change. And since nothing, they say, is more predictable, then there's going to be change. Fine. Then if we are created under the number six, we are incomplete, imperfect, and therefore our actions will bring about problems to the degree that we obey or disrespect divine law. I hope you're following me. You notice, Christians, how you constantly talk about love, and that Farrakhan is a preacher of hate. You need to be quiet. Let me tell you what produces hate. It's not the preaching of Farrakhan. Farrakhan just got here a few days ago. You have to agree that hate was in the world before I got here. And somebody must have been preaching before I took up the book. And they must have been a better preacher than I. Because the world is filled with hate. And I have nothing to do with it. Here's what produces hate.
Go ahead, make it clear.
Since the heavens and the earth are created imperfect, but evolving toward perfection, the planets created at right angles to each other. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said the brain cell of the original people is created to think right. To think right means to think in accord with law and truth. Then if you can think right and act right, you reduce the problem of the wobble in human nature. I'm going to say that again. If you think right and act right, you reduce the problem created by the wobble in human nature. Now, if you don't wish to obey law and follow the dictates of truth, then the wobble in human nature becomes manifest, and your motion then creates disturbance, chaos, confusion, bloodshed, hatred. It is unrighteousness that produces hate. If your nature is to do what is right, and I treat you wrongly, you can't love me even if I'm your father, even if I'm your mother, even if I'm your brother. If I treat you wrong, it is the wrong that I do that will generate hatred in you. Now, listen carefully. It's real hard for any teacher in the black community to produce any brotherhood among us. All of these leaders up here are talking, we got to come together. Well, that's the right talk. But wait a minute. See, that's just talk, and it'll always be mouth. It'll never be real, brothers and sisters. I gotta walk a little bit. Listen, it will never be real, leaders, if in your preaching and your actions, you don't treat each other right. If our actions, one toward the other, is duplicitous, scheming, devious, hidden motives, hidden agendas, playing with good words, but underneath doing evil and dirty deeds, you can't produce love with ingenuous action. You can't produce love on the basis of lies and deceit and treachery and trickery. You can't produce love in a society with murder and robbery and lying and slander at the root of it. So you produce a world filled with hate. Because the world is filled. filled, not with the preaching of Farrakhan. The world is filled with evil, and it is the evil that men do that has produced hatred in the hearts of the people. And now, what you would classify me as a racist or even an anti-Semite, I'm neither a racist nor an anti-Semite. But if I point out your evil with truth, then call me a preacher of truth. And if you will correct your behavior, then love will come as a result of correction. But you can't cast hate on me. Farrakhan is a no good man. What have I done? If I'm no good, what is America? If I'm no good, what is your president? What is your system? What is your education? If I'm no good because of words, how good are you, America, when you have deeds of hatred that have filled the earth from one corner to another? What are you if I'm no good? If I point out your evil tracks in the sands of time, I didn't make the tracks. You made them. And if I point out the tracks that you made, don't blame me for the evil tracks that you made. I'm trying to make a righteous track. And you want to make me the evildoer. How did it begin? You see, Caucasian people, I'm talking to white folk now, and I don't want you to think I'm a hater. I ain't got nothing to do with it. I just want to talk to you for a minute, because you are the rulers. You are the people that have ruled the earth. You can't argue with me. All white people haven't ruled, but your people are rulers, and so all of you benefit. So if you're a bum, don't blame me. If you're homeless, don't blame me. If you're out of a job, don't blame us. Because you've been ruling the world for 6,000 years. You should be able to have a home somewhere. A wobble in the nature of the original man, and you come from the original, then the wobble is even greater in your nature. I'm gonna say it again. I'm dealing with just pure science now. If you want to attack me on the basis of science. And don't get angry. I want you to open your ears and start living. I said, if there's a wobble, imperfection in the nature of the original human being who is black. Now, you can call that racism if you want. But I defy any scholar present to prove that white folk predated the original black people of the earth. I defy you to do that. When your scholars, called anthropologists and archaeologists, want to look for the origin of man, they may go through Europe, but they don't stay there. When they want to find the origin of man, they go where they believe man had his origin. And they still haven't found it yet. but the closest they came was Africa. Is that right? The scholars say that genetically they can trace the beginning of all human beings back to the black woman. I didn't say it, the scholars said it. The Bible calls her Eve, the mother of all living. Black woman, that's you. The mother of all living. Now, my Quranic brothers and sisters, you say, Islam does not deal with color. Islam deals with truth. If we're trying to exalt ourselves because of color, Islam condemns us. But Islam has to deal with color because color is a reality.
Go ahead.
Islam says, the Quran says, that when God created the first human being, He created him out of black mud and fashioned him into shape. Well, if He created the first human being from black mud, He couldn't have been a white man. The first human being in the universe was a black man. Now, listen to what I'm saying. If you black people are the first people, and there's imperfection in your nature and mine, and a wobble in your nature and mine, then what about somebody that you produced from your imperfection? So, white folk, you gotta be very obedient to divine law in order for the wobble in your nature not to poison yourself and all whom you come in contact with. But you have not obeyed divine law. You have set yourself up as a law beside God. So whatever God says you shall not do, you all said it's all right. Hang in there. Go on and do it. God said, the Lord thy God is one God. Have none other God before me. Don't bow down to it. Don't make any graven image to it. What have you done? Come on. You make statues of stone and wood and tell us do what? Bow down to it. What did God say? Don't do it. What did you say? It's all right. These are the images through which we get to God. We don't need stone to get to God. God said, you should keep the Sabbath. You didn't do it. And so we don't do it. Because we were your slaves. We came up under you. You were our teacher. You wanted us to call you Massa. Yes, Massa. Yes, sir, boss. Yes, sir, Massa. Well, hell, now you got to take the weight, Massa. See, God said, let us make man. You said, let us make a nigger. So the nigger is not God's creation. The nigger is from the figment of the imagination of white people. So whatever we are made in America. Whatever we are.
Go ahead, go ahead.
If we are trash, you made us that way. So you have to be the trash can. Yeah, I know it's rough.
I know it's rough. I know it's rough. Listen. We disobeyed.
Right.
And in our disobedience, the wobble in our nature crushed us. In their disobedience, the wobble in their nature, since they are the rulers, they sentenced the whole earth to a certain kind of death under their rule. Now, I have to speak truth. The whole thought of Scripture, bear with me a few more minutes. God made Adam, right? And he tells Adam, eat of all these trees and the fruit of these trees, but this tree, don't eat it. The day you eat it, you will surely die. The serpent comes in and says, look here. You don't have to pay God any attention. See, he's trying to make a slave out of you. What he really means is if you eat this tree of the knowledge of good and evil, your eyes are going to come open. You ain't going to die. Now think about this. Adam ate the fruit. And sure enough, his eyes came open. But he died at the same time. But it wasn't a physical death. This is what you religious theologians have to understand. You did not die physically from the fall of Adam, but we as a human family died spiritually from the fall of Adam. So the scripture says, all in Adam die. Which means then that the whole earth is under the curse of death because of disobedience from the ruler. So the scripture says we are born in sin. And what is sin? Disobedience to the divine law. And we have been shaped in iniquity. We came into a world that was already off course. Neither you nor the present generation of whites shaped this world, but this world shaped the thinking of whites, made you believe you were superior because of the color of your skin, made us believe we were inferior because of the color of our skin. So you walk around with your chest puffed out, crazy as hell, because you feel you're better because you're white. And you are crazy too, walking around with your head bent down, feeling that your blackness is something of a divine curse. So neither mentality is acceptable to God. Neither your inferiority nor his or her superiority is acceptable. So both mentalities have to be destroyed in order that life may come to both black and white. All right. I'm almost where I want to be. Are you listening? So all human beings are under the curse of death. You don't really know real man, real woman, because you have not seen the real man or the real woman, because the real man, which is spiritual man, spiritual woman, lies dead, buried in the lust of the flesh. Are you following me? Now, brothers, sisters, man is created to have power. The Bible says, and give them power, dominion. over the fowl of the air, the fish of the sea, and every creeping thing. It's in the nature of a man to want and have power. It's in the nature of human beings, but particularly the male side of the species. You are not a man if you're deprived of power and the ability to rule. In the house of the Caucasian people, they did not want anybody else to be the man in their house. So they had to cut us off from power and dominion so that they could be the power and the dominion. For in their mind, two things cannot occupy the same space at the same time. If the white man is going to rule, then the black man must sit down. So therefore, black men are deprived of power. We are a powerless group of men. And our women cannot love us like they want to love us. Because they are from God, who is omnipotent. And they adore his power and his wisdom and his spirit and his guidance. And if a man has no power, no wisdom, no guidance, what is there in you for a woman to love? Talk to me. All you can do to try to exercise some power is through sex. And therefore you try to practice being proficient. You don't realize that pain and pleasure are the two most powerful motivating forces. Pain and pleasure. We're always trying to escape pain, and we're always trying to find that which gives us what? Pleasure. The woman wants pleasure, but don't want the pain of childbirth. I wish we could. But I wish I didn't have to. Sorry about that. You have to experience both sides. This is life. So real pleasure comes from the awakening of the spiritual dimensions when there's communion and union of the servant with God. That's real pleasure. It says in the Quran, O soul that is at rest, well pleased with thy Lord and well pleasing. That's perfect peace, contentment of mind. That can't be bought with money. Power can't give you peace. Wealth can't give you peace. It may make you feel like I got what it takes. But most people with money are some of the most pitiful people. Because money can't buy what only God can give. Peace. Contentment of mind. Listen now. Listen, 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 listen. So when you disobey God, that is the beginning of the disturbing of your mind. Hear me now. To the Caucasians who are present in the media, look.
to be in a position of rulership is tremendous responsibility. The whole human family was under white rule. You have to ask yourself, how did we exercise our rule over the human family? How did you exercise your power over the earth? Did you corrupt the earth? Did you corrupt the water? Did you corrupt the air? Did you corrupt the human beings that you found? And you called, when you went there, you said you found paradise. But when you left it, how did you leave it? Everywhere you went, you produced two conditions, hell and death. So says the Bible, and it's correct. This is not hate. This is not hate. It's just truth. Swallow it. Wait. It may be bitter in the mouth, but it might be sweet in the stomach and help us get out of the terrible condition that all of us are in. I don't say these things to show off. I don't say these things to throw off on other human beings. That is unnecessary, and it's not correct behavior. But I say it in hopes that it might strike a responsive chord, that we can begin to see now the error of our conduct.
That's right.
Please hear me now. If the nature of man is to hold power, and you and I are deprived of it, whatever you're deprived of, what are you trying to gain? Come on. What are you trying to gain, brother? Can't you say it a little louder? Isn't that what you want? Because you can't change your condition until you get the power to do it. So if they have power and you are powerless, and they're not willing to share power, then we are locked in a struggle. And that struggle is to be what God has made us to be. And if you stand in our way, we're not trying to take nothing from you. But what we want is what is ours. We must have the power to direct our own lives and our own destiny and to build a future for ourselves. We must have that kind of power. Now listen, please bear with me here.
Yes, sir.
If we want power and they have it, when we try to introduce in the school system Afrocentric learning, because we recognize that Eurocentric learning is not best for us, who do we come up against? Come on. White folks in power. And they say, no! You don't bring that stuff in here. You teach about George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Tommy Jefferson. Teach it like we know it should be. And if you quote it back perfectly, you get an A. But if you challenge them and say, wait a minute, sir, that's a mistake. Who gave you authority to tell us it's a mistake? Well, I read in John Henry Clark's book, or I read in Ben Yockerman's book, or I read in Haki Madhubuti's book, or I read in W.E.B. Du Bois' writing. I read. Well, who are they? So your scholarship is made mockery of.
Right, sir.
So if you want to be a good boy, you quote everything that will please white folk, and you get a degree in quotology. And you come out of there like a parrot, parroting what Nietzsche said, parroting what Aristotle said, parroting.
Go ahead.
But you're not a thinker. And that's why most of the doers in black community never went to college. They never saw the inside of higher learning. They were men from the South or from the Caribbean or from Africa who just had a desire and a thought and a mind and a will to do it, and they got up and they did it. And then they hired the college brother. Since you trained to fit into things but not make things. Just look at our history and look at some of the greatest business people that we've produced. They were not those who matriculated with an MBA from Harvard or Yale or some of the fine business schools. They're people that just come up from the South and said, I want to do such and such and so and so, and did it. Something is wrong with the educational system, and you must know that it wasn't made to serve you. It was made to perpetuate white supremacy. And once you understand that and you try to change it, you have to fight the forces that are there to protect and keep white supremacy in a position of power. And now look, we got black politicians on this stage, some of them. When you got into power politically, didn't you feel good? You became the mayor. I'm the first mayor. I'm the first governor. But you were managing somebody else's affairs. And let's be real. The moment you became a manager in their store and they didn't like your being there, they immediately, from the Justice Department, started setting traps for black mayors, black congressmen. Why? Because your grip on power is challenging white supremacy. And since the guiding principle of this world is that white folk must stay on top at all costs, then they must crush all black business if it go too far. Crush all black entrepreneurs if you go too far. Crush all black artists if you get too smart. Crush all black leaders if you don't speak what they like. Because nobody should have the right to challenge white supremacy and survive. Do you understand that? Well then, if you understand that, then you must understand that the nature of white supremacy and its action to black people and our reaction to it is a total system of injustice. Now that's what I wanted to get to. Did you know that in this universe there is a thing in the Quran called the mizan, or the balance? And did you know that the star in the heavens justifies the creation and gives balance to the human mind? Whenever you deprive a human being of justice, you tip the scale. You notice how justice is symbolized by a woman with a blindfold holding a scale? Do you know what the scale represents? The scale represents the weight of truth and appropriate action in accord with truth. And the woman has a blindfold. She's not supposed to see your race, your color, your station in life. She's supposed to weigh truth and actions in accord with truth. Then the scale is balanced. But when you live in an unjust world and the scale's balance is tipped, then the mind reflects the imbalance in society. So when a person is said to be imbalanced, what are they? Come on. They're insane. Insane means unclean. Not in harmony with law. That which is proper and right. Imbalance. Crazy. Now look. When Caucasian rulers decided to set up their own law in contravention to the laws of God, they set up an unjust rule that would ultimately destroy them and their world. Listen, because the very motion of their world, not in harmony with law, the more it spun, it would spin into chaos, spin into confusion, spin into total madness. And this is what we've come to today. It's not just you. It's the rulers of the world, the rulers of religion, the rulers of government, the rulers in education. The rulers are imbalanced. Their perception of reality is gone. So the man in Romania, Ceausescu, could say, I will be in power a long time. But he couldn't see death coming from beneath his own feet. The Shah of Iran, drunk with the power, supported by the power of America, blinded to what was growing underneath his own feet. All of the governments that America sanctions in South America, Central America, Asia, and Africa, drunk with the power of the back end of the Western world. And you can't perceive reality because your leaders are imbalanced. You're running to Washington looking for guidance. Washington can't guide itself. How can Washington guide you or anybody else in the world? They are imbalanced and not perceiving reality. This is why they could run in to Somalia and attack IDEED. Call IDEED a warlord. And he hides among his people. And they send their best Delta Force in after them. And 18 Americans dead and dragging them through the streets. Because of a silly policy coming out of an imbalanced head. Your policy in Haiti is a disaster. Your policy in Africa is a disaster.
Go ahead.
America, you're on your way to hell and you need guidance. You are unable to guide yourself. The spin of your own world, your own motion of iniquity is producing the chaos, the confusion that is tearing your government and your world apart. The wobble now in your nature is shaking the very foundation of your house. And now it comes to you. You are already under the imbalance of injustice. But even when we were in slavery, there was a deep, compelling God force within us that even through the injustice of slavery, we kept some semblance of balance. Just check it out. Grandma, grandpa, great-grandma, let's go back and remember. See them on the plantation. In the setting of the sun, wiping the sweat from their brow after a long day's work. As they sit down chewing tobacco and spitting in a pail, they would say, "Son, bring me my Bible. Son, don't worry. One day, change is gonna come. Hold on, son. I might not live to see it, son, but hold on, boy, 'cause change is gonna come." And they kept singing their songs. "Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low." What you talking about? I got hope, man, that one day a chariot is coming down and gonna pick me up. Oh, don't you wanna go? See, they had hope. They were troubled, but their minds had balance because there was an inner power that they had that equalized the power coming from the pressures of an unjust condition. Like we learn in physics that there's 14.7 pounds of atmospheric pressure on every square inch of the human body. And as long as you have pressure pushing out on the inside equal to the pressure coming from the outside, you walk with all this heavy pressure and you don't feel it. But when you lose the ability to equalize the pressure from within to the pressure that's coming from without, you cave in. So it is mentally. The pressure of slavery wasn't strong enough. The sun. Should we be afraid of it? Why? It was created to serve you. Moon, stars, everything that you see was created to serve man. If you're afraid of it, you can't master it. You don't even approach it with the thought of mastering the sun. Let's not even talk about mastering ants or bees or birds. But you were created to master everything in creation because everything in creation was created to be the servant of man. Well, if you become afraid, fear restricts you from the study necessary to become a master. Well, there are things in life. I mean, if you were out in the field and a bear jumped up, I mean, a bear will make you afraid, brother. You know? And there are other creatures that will make you afraid too. But you know what? The creatures have a natural fear of you. Because they know something about you that you don't know about yourself. The creatures know that you have been given power over them. They're frightened of the human. But the human has no right to be frightened of the creature. I once was listening to a tape by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I was out in Arizona taking a month to fast and pray and discipline myself for a fight against cancer. And while I was out there, I was listening to a tape of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he was saying that God did not make the original man, black man, to be afraid of anything in his creation. He only made you and me to fear him. And it is the fear of God and God alone that gives you mastery over the creation. But if you don't know God and won't trust God and have faith in God, then things that make you afraid will become your master. So after I heard that on the tape, it just so happened the next morning, every morning, I went for a morning walk. And I would walk from 4 miles every day to 11 and 12 miles sometime on the weekends. So this morning, I was out walking. I always had the brothers to walk a few paces behind me because that was my time of communicating with God, and I felt I wanted to just be to myself. This morning, I'm walking, and a big bull is in the path. I ain't talking about a cow now. And there is a difference. And the bull is about where the exit sign is back there. And I'm walking. The bull see me, I see the bull. The bull stop, and I stop too. And the bull put his head down and start moving his feet, you know. And I know what that means. And you know what that means. And a little fear, you know, jumped up in me. Oh. And I just remembered the words of Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I said, well, wait a minute. I ain't supposed to be afraid of this. I started walking. Now, wait a minute. I'm challenging my fear. I'm not saying you won't be made afraid, but you must not let things punk you. That's what I'm talking about. I couldn't turn around. I couldn't run backwards. I couldn't walk back because I had something in my head that my teacher had told me. So I talked to myself. You heard what he said. And brother, sometimes you got to talk to yourself now. Sometimes you don't have time to talk to yourself. But I had at least 50 or 60 paces to think this thing out. And I started walking toward the bull, and the bull never moved. He put his head down again, and he started doing this, you know. And I kept right on walking. And when I got about 20 paces from the bull, fear jumped in him. And the bull ran off in the bush. I said, Allahu Akbar. And what I'm suggesting to you is that the thing that has made you afraid, if you challenge your fear of that thing, you might find fear jumping into that thing because you were not created by God to be afraid of anything in creation but He Himself. And He's not creation, He's Creator. All right, let's Let's start now. Now, you know, God, we're still on fear. God is worthy to be afraid of, seems like to me. But you got to believe and know that a God exists. And there's too much majesty here for me to think that this magnificent creation doesn't have some not only architect and plan and order, but there had to be a planner and some power to give it order and to regulate the affair of the earth and all its creatures and the heavens above. So whoever that being is, I never met him, but I believe he exists. And since I believe he exists, I have a duty to him. Now, the Bible says the beginning of wisdom. Now, let's think about this now. You haven't even begun to be wise. It said the beginning of wisdom. You're a beginner. If you understand that the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. And I'm going to stop right there just for a minute because we can't spend a lot of time on these things, but I want you to study on it maybe after the lecture, and you will study on these things because you might be confronted with it before you leave or after you leave. At some point, you're going to be confronted with something, and you have to become master. And all I'm trying to get you to do is not to say you ain't afraid, but to challenge fear with faith that you can overcome your fear. Because the moment we overcome that which we are afraid of, we can become its master. Now, everything, of course, except God. Now, if the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God, then what would you call wisdom? If the fear of God makes you a beginner, then what is wisdom? See, wisdom is that which allows you mastery. And you cannot begin to become wise in life if you don't learn the fear of God. And once you learn the fear of God, then nothing in creation becomes able to terrify you. Then you are in the beginner's class of mastery. And you know what's wrong with us as black people? We're afraid. And the fear that we have, I mean, we all go to church, and I guess many of us do, but we don't learn enough about God to fear him above white people. Now, we're going to let's be honest now. I mean, we can shout all over the church, and then you go to work tomorrow, and the boss threatens you, and you feel that the loss of this job is the loss of security, so you start bowing to something that ain't right. You refuse to challenge because you don't want to lose your job. I can understand that. But if you allow a job to punk you, excuse my expression, it's really slang, I shouldn't use it, but I just want to be so clear. I don't want anybody to misunderstand. I'm not telling you to be a fool and lose your job. But I am telling you that you can challenge anybody with respect, and they will learn to respect you and become afraid, not of your muscle, but of truth that's in your mouth that you are not afraid to speak when the situation calls for it. And you know what? Practically every day in our lives, we are confronted with something that we walk away from. We don't want to tell the truth. Whatever reason you give yourself, well, I ain't going to say nothing because they ain't going to understand, or I ain't going to say nothing because you know how hot-headed the boss is. But there's a way to do everything. But if you let people continue to make you afraid, then you'll never be the man that God intended you to be. And you must not oppose God's will for you. God wants you to be a man. God knows that you can never take charge of your post as a man and fulfill the responsibility that God lays on us as men if we are afraid. Your duty is support, provision, protection for your female. How are you going to protect her afraid? How can you provide for her and you're afraid that because of a job, you're not going to eat? Birds eat. Bees eat. Worms eat. Are you better than a bird, a bee, and a worm that you should put your life in the hands of a Caucasian master and you say that God is not able to feed you? No, no, no. You will survive. Even if the odds are against you, you will survive. You don't have to lie, cheat, or steal to survive. If you go according to the way God directs you, you will win. But if you become afraid, the fear restricts you. And you know, all of us, men and women, need psychological help. I was an athlete, and when I was a young track, I don't want to say track star, but I was an athlete. And the first meet of the year, I would either equal the record or break it. Because in that meet, there was no pressure. But when it came time for the championships, I let fear and nervousness restrict me, and I lost to those who were inferior in terms of time. And here's the finals that is the championship, and I lose in a time that I had beaten in the first meet of the year. So I didn't need more running. I needed somebody to help me with my mind. And that's what you need. We need. You need somebody to help you with the way you think. And that's what makes the Honorable Elijah Muhammad so valuable to black people. The Bible calls him a wonderful counselor. And you know, when you get in trouble, they say, well, go see the counselor. But that's what Elijah Muhammad is known for, the wisdom of his counsel. Now, look, I'm not Superman. I'm far from that. But I appear to be that to many because I won't let the power of this world punk me. Now you know,
You know white folk have power. You know the government has power. Don't you? Awesome power. And you know that those Jewish people that don't like Farrakhan, they are organized, they are disciplined, they have money, they have power. But I cannot let them make me afraid. I was teaching one time in New York at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. I had made a speech that was very innocuous, you know, harmless. I didn't, you know, hit them too hard. I kind of crafted the speech real nice. I got through the speech fine. The first question, this detective got up, kind of big, imposing fella, and he opened his coat and he threw it back. And there was this big gun on his hip. And he wanted to make sure that I saw the weapon. Now he's trying to do what? Exactly. Trying to make me afraid. And then he said, Minister Farrakhan, I understand that your teacher, Elijah Muhammad, teaches that all us white people are devils. Now that was my heart. Now he had succeeded. He made me afraid. Now, after he made me afraid, if I had laid down on what I know Elijah Muhammad teaches, then I'm through. I'm not only through in terms of him, but the worst thing, I'm through with myself. And if you can't be true to you, you can't be true to nobody. So he made me afraid, but then I challenged my fear. I said, yes, Elijah Muhammad does teach that all white people are devils. And now let me tell you why.
This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We're giving homage and honor to the life-giving teachings of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, as taught to us by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, on the coming 23rd anniversary of the Million Man March. I want to remind you one and all that Sunday, October 14th, 2018, we will be celebrating here in the city of Detroit, and we will have the honor, the pleasure, and the distinction of being addressed live and in person by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan at the Aretha Franklin Amphitheater. The renamed facility used to be called Shane Park. It is now the Aretha Franklin Amphitheater, 2600 Atwater Street in the city of Detroit. And what's great about this wonderful day, that the admission is free. For the Holy Day of Atonement, 2018, the Day of Atonement, Reconciliation, and Responsibility of the Black Community to and for itself, we will be celebrating that day at the Aretha Franklin Amphitheater. As we begin to close out this edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network, we're going to close out with what I believe to be a very, very, very conscious issue that we can no longer ignore. It is called the science to exterminate blacks. The science to exterminate blacks.
A think tank in the UK says too many kids are what's making the planet worse.
In many black communities, for every child actually born, three others are aborted, more than double the rate among whites. Some say abortion is the number one killer in the black community.
African Americans here in this country are the only ethnic group in any place on the globe that's not replacing themselves. This is genocide.
Hillary Clinton received the Margaret Sanger Award. This is a woman who started an organization called Planned Parenthood, and that woman called black people human weeds.
An organization whose founder believed in eugenics.
The goal, to rid the country of the feeble-minded, defective.
States in the United States refusing to compensate victims who were forcibly sterilized because they were deemed unfit to reproduce.
If they could keep certain segments of the population from reproducing, that all the world's problems would disappear. And so
we have spent the past few weeks calling and emailing politicians in California, and the silence has been astonishing.
Welcome to this talk. It's called The Science Agenda to Exterminate Blacks. This is a fact-based presentation, but it is not politically correct in the status quo halls of science and medicine, because they don't want this talked about. And they especially don't want it talked about by a white scientist. And I'll give you a little bit of information about my background soon so you understand where I'm coming from and why I'm taking the steps to go public with this information. The truth is, there is a concerted, organized, long-standing effort to eliminate African Americans from the human gene pool. Not just African Americans, by the way, but Africans. This is happening right now. You are being subjected to it. It's happening through multiple vectors of science, medicine, and food that I will detail here in this talk. And it's all being done covertly. So almost no one is aware of this. The entire mainstream media refuses to acknowledge this. The scientific community will say that none of this is true. And yet, if you look at the facts that I'm going to share with you and the history that's undeniable, you will see there is a concerted, organized effort to eliminate blacks, i.e. African Americans. I'm going to use those terms interchangeably just for brevity here. But there is an effort to eliminate those people from the human gene pool. My background, just so you know, my name is Mike Adams. I'm known as the Health Ranger. I am a lab science director. I founded and built a world-class analytical laboratory from scratch. It is ISO accredited. It's recognized around the world for analytical science of heavy metals and food contamination, environmental contamination, and so on. We've done volunteer work, testing over 600 samples of the U.S. water supply, and we've also volunteered our lab efforts to Native American tribes who have been impacted by the EPA's poisoning of their rivers. So, by the way, it's not just blacks that are trying to be eliminated by the status quo. It's also Native Americans and other minority groups that are routinely targeted by not just the EPA, but other groups that we'll talk about here. I do want you to know that because I am an outspoken science whistleblower, that I am maliciously attacked, defamed, lied about. I am targeted for intimidation tactics. They try to silence my words. They try to make sure that you can't hear this talk. I've been death threatened. I've been stalked. I have to live a lifestyle of extreme secrecy. And I'm armed 24/7, including right now. And this is what it takes in our world today to tell the truth about science and medicine, especially when you are uncovering a mass agenda of genocide and eugenics, which is very prevalent through our systems of science and medicine today. So I do want all of you to know, all of you who are watching, and if you're sharing this with your friends and colleagues, I do want you to know that I'm putting myself at risk to say these things, especially as a credible scientist of a an accredited laboratory facility, which has everything to do with the heavy metals poisoning that we're going to talk about. They absolutely don't want this information getting out. So let's start with something that we can all easily agree upon, because it has been in the news everywhere, and that is the heavy metals poisoning of the predominantly black communities of Flint, Michigan. So no one says that's a conspiracy theory, right? The water supply for millions of citizens in that region, who again were predominantly black, was allowed to be deliberately poisoned with lead, a toxic heavy metal that causes bone disorders, but more importantly, it causes a kind of brain lobotomy. It causes loss of cognitive function. It reduces IQs. It causes heart problems and many other problems. This was deliberately allowed to poison the water supply of Flint, Michigan, knowing that that water supply served minority communities. And in fact, this was so deliberate and it was so criminal that the Attorney General of Michigan has so far filed at least 43 criminal charges against predominantly scientists and bureaucrats who ran teams of scientists, water quality experts, and so on, many of whom have been charged with felony crimes. Now, water quality officials in Flint, Michigan were tasked with testing the water and making sure that it was, you know, clean or safe to drink. And yet, every time they showed lead in the water, they covered it up. They ditched that sample, they deleted it from the spreadsheet, you know, they replaced it with another sample from some other source. They committed massive scientific fraud, and they did this deliberately to cover up the fact that the African American population of Flint, Michigan, or Detroit, Greater Detroit, was being systematically poisoned. And this was going on year after year. And it could be going on now in other cities across the country. What we have found in our testing is that about 6.9% of the municipal water in America is poisoned with heavy metals. We've published those numbers at naturalsciencejournal.org in a science paper that shows you the actual data. It turns out that those areas that are most affected by these toxic heavy metals tend to be those with a predominantly larger population of African Americans. So it's the minority communities that are being impacted more so than, let's say, you know, rich white communities. Getting back to the Flint, Michigan situation, we know that they knew about this and they failed to tell people. They covered it up and they allowed it to continue. They deliberately allowed millions of children and adults, senior citizens, who were predominantly black, to be poisoned with this toxic heavy metal. Would that have happened in a rich California white community? I doubt it. I doubt it. In 2007, Chicago convened a breast cancer task force to try to figure out why so many black men and women were dying of cancer. For black women, it's mostly breast cancer. For black men, it's mostly prostate cancer. And across the cancer industry, every doctor will tell you that cancers are known to be far more severe in African American patients than, let's say, Caucasian patients. But they don't understand why. And I'll tell you why. It's a very simple reason. It has everything to do with melanin in the skin. If you have darker skin pigmentation, because your ancestors came from a region closer to the equator, where sun exposure is more intense. And so the melanin in the skin is designed to block UV radiation. It's a built-in sunscreen. It's actually a feature. You know, black skin is a feature. It's a survival mechanism of those whose ancestors lived near the equator. But it blocks vitamin D production at the same time. You see, because the ancestors, all of our ancestors, were outdoors people. They spent their time outdoors. They didn't live in offices. They didn't work indoors all day long. So they had too much sun. And so the dark skin pigmentation blocked the excessive sun, and it protected them from UV radiation. Well, today, we all live indoors, don't we, for the most part? Indoor lifestyles, office jobs, even people who work in hospitals are working indoors. And when black people work indoors or live indoors, they become sunlight deficient. especially because of the melanin in their skin. So now that same feature of their skin that blocked excessive sun radiation in, let's say, Africa, now in New Jersey or New York, it's a detriment because it's causing African-American populations to become deficient in vitamin D. And this is what's happening in Chicago and Detroit, and especially the more northern latitudes of northern United States, Canada, and so on. Black men in the UK have very high rates of prostate cancer, and when they get diagnosed with prostate cancer, the prognosis is less positive than, let's say, a white person with prostate cancer. The cancers are more aggressive. They're more deadly. The answer is lack of vitamin D. And yet in 2007, the Chicago Breast Cancer Task Force convened, I think, over 100 doctors and nurses to try to have a powwow, a team effort to try to figure out why is cancer worse in black people in Chicago. And wouldn't you know it, after spending days or even weeks on this project, they couldn't come up with the truth. The truth that people with dark skin are sunlight deficient, they're vitamin D deficient, and that's why the cancer is more aggressive, because vitamin D halts cancer. And vitamin D can be purchased for a nickel a day. Every black person in Chicago, in Detroit, in New York, in the UK could prevent cancer. About 4 out of 5 cancers, by the way, with nothing but vitamin D. And yet the cancer industry won't tell them that. So here's a case where you have a disease that is disproportionately more aggressive in blacks versus whites. And white people, they absorb sunlight more efficiently when they're outdoors, so they need less time in the sun to generate the same amount of vitamin D as a black person who needs more time in the sun. And yet nobody is telling African Americans this simple truth. Nobody. This information is being denied the black community in America. And it's just, again, a very small part of the overall vector that I'm going to be continuing to reveal here that is an effort to exterminate blacks. Now let's talk about the abortion industry. I'm not going to download politics on you about whether you think abortion should be legal or illegal, or illegal in the third trimester and legal in the other two, or whatever. That's your deal. That's another day, another topic. My point is that abortion ends a life, and it ends certainly a potential life. And I say abortion ends a living human baby. Now, abortion centers are deliberately set up where? Predominantly black communities. Abortion messaging and abortion marketing is more aggressive toward black communities than it is white communities or non-black communities. The Planned Parenthood / abortion industry needs a steady supply of black women getting pregnant and wanting to terminate those pregnancies in order for them to be able to harvest tissue and organs from partial birth abortions, which are almost all black babies. Now, a partial birth abortion, in case you're not familiar with this, is when there's a baby that could be born and could be brought into this world, is capable of breathing and living. It's conscious. It has memories. It has sensory complexity. It has consciousness. It has feelings. And it's partially born. Let's say just the head is born. And then at that moment, the abortion center murders that baby. And then they harvest the organs. They will harvest the brainstem. They will harvest the lungs. They will harvest the kidneys. They will harvest the heart. And they, you know what they do with those tissues? Well, we're told they use them for medical research. It turns out most of those tissues are sold to vaccine manufacturers. And they use those tissues to grow biomass for vaccines that are then injected into other children. And this is openly admitted by the vaccine industry and the CDC. And on my website, Natural News, we have shown screenshots of the ingredients lists of these vaccines, such as chickenpox vaccine, varicella, uses human fetal tissue. And that human fetal tissue comes predominantly from black babies. So it's not just that the abortion centers are set up in predominantly black communities to reduce the population numbers of black children and future black adults, but it's also that those black children are having their organs harvested in order to make vaccines that are injected into other babies. There is a kind of racial medical cannibalism that is taking place in America today, and it combines the evil of the Planned Parenthood abortion industry and the vaccine industry, combines all that with an overlay of eugenics and genocide. And by the way, if you don't think that abortion is tied to a history of eugenics and genocide, you need to read the history of Margaret Sanger, one of the key founders of Planned Parenthood, who called black people human weeds, and she said that it's better to kill black babies in the womb so that they don't become adults. And I'm paraphrasing that. I don't know the exact quote, but it's something along those lines. She saw abortion as a key vector of exterminating the black population in our world, and that goal is being carried out today. And by the way, she was so effective with this narrative and with this obscene, twisted logic of genocide that the Nazis borrowed her narrative and her mindset and said, oh, that sounds like a good idea, let's apply it to the Jews. So Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich, their Holocaust against the Jews was modeled after the Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger eugenics genocide model that continues today in America. There is a Holocaust in America today, and it's a Holocaust that specifically targets black Americans. And yet,
it's not so mad science with your host, but I have Muhammad here on the Black Hole Radio Network. The thing about science, you can't argue with the science when you have the facts to support it. You can't argue with the math when the numbers prove out. Nor can you argue with the history when you document your own history and you are then confronted with your own words. In the words of Michael Jackson, we're dealing with the man in the mirror, and the man in the mirror is you. So, Sunday, October 14th, the doors open at 11 a.m. at the Aretha Franklin Amphitheater, formerly Shane Park. The admission is free for the 23rd anniversary celebration of the Million Man March, the holy day of atonement for the black community. I pray, we pray, you should pray, that we are all there, arm in arm, hand in hand, step for step. Let's show our unity and show forth our power. Imam Elijah Muhammad told us that the unity of the black community is stronger than an atomic bomb. Let's show them what an encouraged slogan looks like. In the will of Allah, we'll be right back, 6:30 p.m. next week, with a new edition of Not Good Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. I bid you all farewell from the immortal words of Adam